I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Last year, when the author and historian Chuck Davis died, I hosted a bit of a tribute program with guests Alan Twigg, Sam Sullivan, and David Berner. Harbor Publishing's Howard White was also on, and we talked about this book that Davis was working on and about the work that White, along with so many others, were doing to help get the thing published. Well, that book is out now, and like Chuck Davis, it's fun, fat, and full of facts. The Chuck Davis's History of Metropolitan Vancouver is a very fine achievement. After getting it a few weeks ago, I haven't stopped going to it, looking at it, flipping through it, spending hours at a time reading up on the stories and anecdotes contained therein. It's a book that many people will be looking at literally the rest of their life. It's a towering achievement. Joining me now to talk about the book is someone who was instrumental in getting it to press, Chuck's friend, the journalist Alan Garr. There will be a public book launch Tuesday, the 6th of December, at the Vancouver Public Library. That's at 7 p.m. Alan Garr's column is read weekly in the Vancouver Courier, and he was last on during his campaign for a seat on the Van City Board. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Alan Garr. Good morning, Mr. Garr.
Hi, Joe. How are you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
See, like, I'm good, but you're quite typical of people who pick up this book, and it's like it's addictive.
Mm-hmm.
You just can't. It's such an easy read, and kind of it's so varied in content. You just keep, you know, it's like, as I tell people, it's like eating peanuts, you know?
Yeah.
When you start, it's hard to stop.
And now you were responsible with the photos, I understand?
Yeah, no, first of all, I was going to help Chuck finish the book once we found out that basically he didn't have long to live, and that didn't work out. Just as I was going to start meetings with him, he ended up in the hospital, and a couple weeks later, that was that for Chuck. But when he was in the hospital, we talked about what he wanted it to look like and feel like. And so I went up and had a meeting at Howie White's place up on Seashell, at his publishing house, Harbor Publishing. I thought it was just going to be one or two people, or actually a dozen people in the room. There were writers, there were editors, there were graphic design people, there were whipcrackers, there was Howie. So I took it as part of my role was to organize things down here in Vancouver, because most of the crew was up on the coast, you know, tied into Howard White's publishing. So, and it was easy. I contacted the archives, Vancouver Archives, the Vancouver Public Library, and Pacific Press, which produced the Sun of the Province, and it was just like easy as pie. As I said, this is for Chuck. Whatever you want, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Usually these places are difficult to get photos from, or they charge. But with this, it was just. Just send your photographers, send your graphic people down here, and we'll help them out with whatever they need. It was just an incredible generosity because it was Chuck Davis. And we ended up with a book that has more photos in it than any other book that's ever been produced in this region. And I'm sure as you were thumbing through, you stopped and looked at the photos and just didn't read the reading there.
Yeah, yeah. He'd been working on this for how long?
Oh, years. Yeah. Just years. I mean, and Chuck, you know, like, he... There were two things that Chuck didn't understand very well. One was deadlines, and the other one was budgets. And every book he's produced has just been just huge. You know, like the Greater Vancouver book was another fat tome, and before that, the Vancouver book. So he'd been working on it for years. In fact, he got to the stage shortly before I got involved where he'd run out of money for working on the book and had taken on an assignment to write a book about... the mining industry in British Columbia to pick up a few bucks. So when he became seriously ill or knew he was seriously ill, Howard and Alan Twigg, two people you had on your show to talk about this, kind of moved in, found someone else to take over that other project, found some bucks to keep Chuck going on this. So, but it was years in the works, years. It just kept expanding.
Yeah. And so when you guys got to it after he died, how much of it had he completed?
Well, I'd like to say he did the first 250 years,
yeah.
And it took 40 of us to do the last 20. So so in terms of the content, it was mostly there. There were no photos, of course, and there were no cut lines, and you know, everything had to be edited. But he'd written virtually all of it. You know, I mean, we did the last 20 years, and But to do that, I went and visited his house and went into. Have you ever been to his office?
No, but I've seen pictures and heard about it. Yeah.
Right. It is the world's largest gerbil nest. It's just, you know, be careful where you step. You're stepping on a book or a file, or, you know, you pull out a drawer and it's just overflowing with information. So we went out there and downloaded stuff off his computer to try and figure out what he had done and for the last couple decades. And then the problem was his computer is so old that we had to figure out a program to convert what we had on our memory sticks onto our computers, and we did that. And there were bits and pieces, and it was really... but we just figured out his strategy of where he did his research. And, I used his books as well as archives to get material. Pacific Press and Debbie Millward, who's the chief librarian there, was extremely helpful. She just ran off, media runs annual summaries at New Year's about the kind of the highlights of the year. So we use those for all the regional papers and for the big papers in town. And I consulted with the other writers. There were two or three of us who were kind of filling in the gaps, and we just figured out a strategy. The main challenge, I would say, was to just keep Chuck's tone all the way through, you know, his idea of what should be in there. And I hope we were successful at that.
And it's accessible. You know, you don't have to do a lot of thinking.
No, but you think afterwards.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's, like, where I was talking to Marsha Lederman, who's did a review for
The Globe and Mail.
Yeah. And she took it home, right? And she's got a couple of little kids around. They're under 10 years old. And they were on it like white on rice, as they say. You know, what year was I born? Let's see the year I was born. I want to figure out what was going on there. So it's accessible at that level for kids, you know, who just want to see pictures and get information about their time on this planet. And for, you know, every generation, it's very good. And it's not all kind of... serious. There's some funny stuff. There's some serious stuff. There's all kinds of things about us as a community that you discover that makes you understand the region better.
Yeah, and it's a book that I said I'll be looking at the rest of my life. But I'm sure people not born yet will be looking at it for just a sense of who we were, right?
Well, yeah, and if you turn up in this town and you've just moved here, mm-hmm. pick it up, you know, you'll find out about our history. And it's not kind of, as you say, a great heavy intellectual tome. It's easy reading. It's like a continuous items column in a newspaper.
Yeah, and he did an items column for many years, right?
Yeah, and that was his style. I mean, he wrote this as a populist journalist, you know, and that's how it feels. It's that's how it reads. It's pretty easy reading.
Now, there's a list in the front of these businesses, these sponsors, the Board of Trade chief among them, who underwrote Chuck's work on this book over the years. It wasn't enough, right?
No, it wasn't. He always went out and got sponsors. Then he'd use up that money, and he'd never have enough. And it's not like this isn't because he led a lavish lifestyle. It was because it took him, his ideas just kept expanding and expanding. So there was more money raised afterwards. Once we knew that he was ill, there was more money raised. There was money raised to publish the book from generous individuals, plus the city threw in $20,000, the city of Vancouver, to get this thing out there. And then, as I say, a lot of people just gave their time and gave their photos, and everyone from Stephen Hume to Tom Hawthorne to, you know, a lot of journalists put effort into this. And it was like a community activity, you know? It was like, what happened, as you may know, you know, once we knew Chuck was going to die, all of a sudden the city said, what have we done for this great guy? We better name a day after him. And then other people got together and said, well, we can give him the George Woodcock Award for his contributions to literature in this region. So there was this wave of response, because for years Chuck just quietly worked away out in his little office out in Surrey. You know, he was a member of the Vancouver Historical Society. He contributed a great deal there. He would lecture at schools. But he wasn't like a big, flashy guy. He just...
Yeah.
He just did his work. He contributed to the community and never made a big deal about it. And people, he just worked his way into our hearts and left us with this great gift.
Yeah. Now, he's been compared to Major Matthews, the city's, I guess, first
archivist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is a comparison apt?
Well, Major Matthews, I don't think he ever wrote anything. He just collected stuff. Chuck laid this stuff out. And I mean, I think they both had a passion for the city. There's no question. But Chuck laid this stuff out so that it is readily accessible. And I think that might be a big difference. You know, if you want to know what happened, it's all here. It's easy to access. Matthews just piled stuff up and was the first archivist.
Yeah. How did you guys meet?
We met in the early 70s when we both were working at what was then BCTV and is now Global.
Mm-hmm.
And we were hired, he was there first, and then I started. We were the feature reporters in the NewsHour, and Chuck and I were responsible for 15 minutes of television every day, 5 days a week. And if you know television, that's a lot. I can't believe it. I mean, no one would do that now. It's just nuts. There were two of us, one cameraman, one film editor. Everything was black and white film. And one producer, a guy named Al Clapp, and me and Chuck. And that's how we met. We were doing that show every day, you know, living in each other's pockets for 5 days a week.
Yeah, and he must have been fun to be around, right?
Well, he was, as you said about the book, you know, fat, fun, and full of facts. That was Chuck. He would frequently start out with, I got this idea for a book, you know.
Yeah.
But he was just, he had such an easy but very sharp eye about what was going on in the world. He wasn't political. You wouldn't say that he had kind of a, he was never angry. He just had a very open, mellow, sharp eye when it came to looking at the world, and that made him fun. I mean, he didn't think like me, and that's always interesting to work with someone that's very different from you. You know, after work, we'd go out for a drink on Friday nights and just have a good laugh. There was also Norm Groman. I don't know if people remember him. He was the weatherman there and a longtime boyhood friend of Chuck's. They grew up together, spent time in the Fraser Valley, so Norm was working there, and we were just like a little little gang, you know, that did TV.
Now, just branching out here for just a sec, we've just had an election in this city. Is COPE finished?
Is COPE finished?
Yeah.
That's a change in topic. I don't think they are. I mean, I think they're down, but I think their roots are so deep here. I mean, they started in 68 or something. So their roots are so deep here. I think that they will bounce back. I think they kind of didn't help themselves by their nomination activities, you know, last time by putting David Cadman on ice and picking up Tim Lewis. I don't think that helped them one bit. And people are still grumbling and trying to analyze that, but I don't think they're gone yet. I think they've got a structure, they've got membership, they've got allegiances. They did what they said they were going to do in terms of their deal with Vision. So I don't think it's over yet.
So did Vision not vote? Vision voters, did they just not live up to the deal and not vote for them? Is that what happened?
You know, I'm not sure what happened. Don't forget, there was a split on the left too. There was this West End group.
The Neighborhoods for Sustainable Vancouver.
That's right.
Yeah.
So Neighborhoods from Sustainable Vancouver. So unless you talk to individual voters, it's hard to say. So I would say some people from Vision definitely didn't vote for Tim Lewis, and may have thrown their votes to Adrian Carr. Citizens for, you know, that other group, the Sustainable Vancouver group, their top vote-getter got 19,000 votes. Where did they come from? You know, the guy they ran for mayor got 4,000 votes. I don't think he dented, he didn't dent Gregor very much. I don't know where his votes came from. But I'd like to know where those people who voted for that group didn't vote. Did they not vote for COPE? Was it Vision people who were turned off by the nomination process that that Cope had where they ditched Cadman and didn't vote that way? I don't know. There's no question that they got buried by the fact that they haven't been in power for a long time. Don't forget, the 3 years ago, they didn't have even quite as good a deal with Vision, mm-hmm. and they did better. But 3 years ago, Vision wasn't as dominant. The name wasn't as known. And Cope was far better known because they'd been in government fairly recently. And I think that over the past 3 years, their brand declined in value. Vision's rose in value. So people voting may have said, well, I don't know about these Cope guys. There's some confusion over, you know, are they going to the left with Tim Lewis or what's happening? And then there's this other neighborhood group. So maybe I'll just stick with Vision. But I think you'd have to really debrief people and on how they voted to ever figure that out.
Did the election result, though, did that surprise you?
Well, I think Gregor did better than I thought. I figured he'd get 5, and he yeah. got 7. But it doesn't surprise me that he won. I don't think the NPA, you know, I think they ran the campaign they could, given the candidates they had and the situation they were in, which inevitably meant that it would be an attack campaign on Gregor, trying to get people to motivate their base. I think they did motivate their base. Anton got more votes than Ladner the last time. Of course, last time Ladner was in the middle of this brutal fight with Sam Sullivan, who was the incumbent who didn't get his party's nomination for the NPA. But so it's not like the NPA did really badly. It's just they didn't get enough to do much in terms of electing people. So overall, I wasn't surprised at Vision 1. I was a little uncertain as to what was going to happen in the last few weeks. The Vision people say our polling showed these results right from the start. And if you looked at the last week or so of the campaign, what you noticed was that Gregor was advertising himself, Vision, and Tony Tang. And Tony is the new guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously they seemed confident that their incumbents were going to win, and they were just trying to bring this new guy on. And that's what happened.
So back to the book now.
Oh, the book. Okay.
I couldn't resist it.
Well, that's fine.
You're a columnist. And
yeah, no. That's fine.
Talk about politics. I don't think Chuck would
mind. We're trying to sell a book here, though.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. The family, the Davis family, Edna Davis, the widow, and the daughter, Stephanie, they must be pleased with the book.
I think they are. I saw there was kind of an insider launch a couple weeks ago that actually the Georgia Hotel sponsored, mm-hmm. which was very nice of them. And Edna was there along with Norm Groman, who's a longtime friend of Chuck, and many friends of Chuck's were there. And everyone was very pleased. I mean, this is a very nice looking book too.
Yeah,
you know,
it is,
I mean,
it is.
I think that the publishers did a great job. It's beautifully printed. By the way, I just heard yesterday it's now on the bestsellers list in BC.
Uh-huh.
And this is even before it's been officially launched. So obviously many people are like you, Joe, and they're saying, gee, this is a really neat little book. I'm going to read it myself. I'm going to give it to my mother, my father, my kid.
It's a great Christmas gift.
It's a great Christmas gift.
Yeah.
And I think that, Edna's very happy with it. I'm sure Stephanie is, too. So, and I'll see them probably on the 6th when we do the next launch.
Yeah, and so you'll be part of that.
Yeah, I will. And Red Robinson and a few other people like that who are longtime buddies of Chuck's. So, as I say, it's a great gift that he left us with. I was talking to Howard White last night, and he said it's too bad the old guy isn't around to see it, and I think it's too bad, but, we're doing this for Chuck, and I'm kind of blessed to be part of it, and I think it's just terrific.
Alan, it's good to talk again. Thanks for this.
Okay, well, now, the last time I talked to you mm-hmm. was when I was running for the Van City Board, and
right.
I succeeded,
uh-huh.
doubtless because of the coverage that you get for your program.
My vote, too. Yeah.
And your vote.
Yeah.
Now, let's see what you can do for this book, Joe.
Yes. Thank you
very much for your interest. I really appreciate
you're
it.
You're very welcome. The book is from Harbor Publishing. The public's invited to attend the launch of the book, The Chuck Davis History of Metropolitan Vancouver. That's Tuesday, the 6th of December at the Vancouver Public Library. Alan Garr on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunder.